I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 491. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me right now, but he will be joining us a little bit later. Of course, we are in two different places today. He is back home in Las Vegas, currently at the media day for UFC on ESPN 62, whereas I am in Washington, D.C. for 2024 PFL Playoffs 3, where media day has already concluded. And therefore, I said, well, you know what? Instead of waiting around on Cole Coffee, why don't we get down and talk about some things that need to be talked about right now? Let him finish up his work and, you know, with the time change and all that stuff. It would have been a little bit late here on the East Coast by the time he wraps up. So we'll let him continue working and then bring him on at the conclusion of that Vegas media day to talk about the things that he saw out there. Meanwhile, we'll talk about this past weekend, about the things that are happening here in Washington, D.C. Just my third time in Washington, D.C., by the way. During the junkie days of travel and all that, you know, we always had, of course, Dan Stupp lived in Ohio, so he was kind of already out this way. Then we brought on Matt Erickson as well, and he was a Chicago area guy, so he would kind of make it out to these. Those two guys handled a lot more of the East Coast shows. I never really made it out here much. This is actually my third time in Washington, D.C., and first time during the summer, and man, I'm going to have to make it back out here during the summer. I know there are days where it gets really hot out here. Although, you know, coming from Las Vegas, I'm not exactly going to say that it would bother me too much. But I have heard that it gets a little warm here during the summer. But right now, man, the weather is nice out there. But the only other times I've been here, once I came here when I was like, gosh, how old would I have been, man? Like 19 or so, I think. I came here and I only made it to RFK Stadium. I didn't even get a chance to come in the city proper and, you know, look around at all the monuments and all that stuff. So I came in for the second ever MLS Cup final back in 1997. And again, that was the old RFK Stadium, which I believe I'm pretty sure they've since torn that down. I know they have a new stadium, but made it for that. But I mean, I never even really got to see around the city. I actually drove from Dallas out here, went to visit a friend that was living in Newport News, Virginia, and then went to the game and then went back home. And then I came out here last year for the PFL Finals, which was in November, with my wife and kid, and it was cold, man. It was cold. I'm not gonna lie, it was really, really cold, and I'm not a cold weather guy. Luckily, they still got to go around during the days. You know, I was working the media days and that sort of stuff, but I've never really explored the city much. We'll have to make it back out here. We're staying at the Capitol Hilton, which is, I mean, literally, you walk out the front door and you look to the left, and two blocks down the road is the White House, and then the White House and the Washington Monument behind it, and it's cool, right? I mean, I'm not, you know, regardless of how you feel about government and politics and all that stuff, I mean, there's a lot of history here, and just my third time here, I've the cold weather times. It was funny, actually, that RFK game, I'll never forget. Again, this is, I mean, 1997, we're talking a long time ago, but I ended up having to buy, like, hundreds of dollars worth of merchandise because I was wearing warm weather clothes. I was coming from Dallas at the time, and it started like raining and stuff during the final, so it was cold, and I was having to buy like long sleeve stuff. So never forget that. But anyway, I'm gonna have to make it back out here to the summer and have some time to go around a little bit. It seems like a whole different town. It seems very, very cool. So before we get into PFL, we'll talk the continued fallout of UFC 305. Of course, everybody's still talking about it, recapping the Dricus du Plessis victory. It's funny because everybody just uses the same descriptions. You know, the guy's awkward. You know, what he's doing shouldn't work. I think it's just such a reminder, again, about how volatile this game is, man. And I give a shout out to everybody that is so meticulous with the breakdowns of technique and the tendencies and the analysis and all those things, only to ultimately realize, man, this is a damn fist fight and anything can happen. And Dricus just seems to be one of those guys that's so durable and tough and aggressive, and steadfast in his ways, that, you know, he can wade through some things that might not be typical or might not be advised, and he still makes it work for him. So I do think the focus on footwork sometimes that I see out there, and I've seen it, you know, for years, but obviously especially in the wake of this, man, footwork in MMA is a lot different, right? Because of the fact that, you know, we talked about this. I talked about it a little bit on Cage Side with John Morgan, with Eric McMahon, about Eric's much more into the technique side of things and the breakdowns. He's really, really good at it. He's a lifelong martial artist. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. So if you haven't checked out that show on Grind City Media, definitely do that. And he goes much more into the technical side of it. And I enjoy those discussions with him. Whereas obviously here, Cole Coffey and I, man, we're normally talking about, you know, the storylines and what we're seeing behind the scenes. You know, it's just two kind of different kind of looks at it. But one of the things we talked about on there is how, you know, when I watch Trickus, I almost see how he almost fights square, but he makes it work because he's switching stances and he can press forward. So he's honestly can look at either way. So it's not like he has to blade off in either direction. And that allows itself perfectly into takedowns. I mean, you think about when you're shooting a takedown, I mean, what are you doing? You're going from a fighting stance. Of course, you know, a lot of guys that are used to shooting one way will stand that way as a striker. Sometimes guys that are right-handed, if they're grapplers at heart, you know, they'll stand with a southpaw stance because they like to shoot with that direction forward. And at that point, what do? Well, you immediately push into a squared moment as you drive through, and then you turn and look for the takedown. But he just makes that work, man. And it's, you know, I think the respect has to come around on him a little bit. I've seen a lot of talk about the rankings after this one, and in some of the divisions as well. Not just like the pound for pound rankings. Obviously, the pound for pound rankings. I to be honest, man, I thought you really could have gone even higher than you did with Dricus du Plessis at number 6. I mean, that was a big move up. He jumps up to 5 spots from number 11 to number 6. So it's a big move. But man, when you really take a step back, and again, get out whether you like the guy, get out what you think about his style, his stance, his whatever else. I mean, this run that he's on right now is pretty incredible. 22-2. I think the record stands with 20 finishes among those, which is incredible. 10-fight win streak, undefeated in the UFC. And then what stands out to me the most, and, you know, I understand people may look at it with an asterisk, with the Sean Strickland fight being a close fight, but consecutive wins over the number 1, 2, and 3 contenders in your division. That's special. I mean, that does not happen very often in any division, in any time frame, in any circumstance. To have consecutive wins over number 1, number 2, and number 3. And 2 of those be finishes, by the way. That's impressive. And, you know, you look at the other guys in the division. I mean, Islam Makhachev doesn't have that. You know what I mean? He does have a win over Armin Sarukin, but it's, you know, in the past. Obviously, you got Oliveira and Gaethje in there as well. I mean, you look at any other division out there. I mean, bantamweight division right now, Sean O'Malley has Marab up next. He has a win over Jan, but then there's Umar Nurmagomedov in there. Ilya Topuria, should he get a win, he'd be well on his way to doing that because he'd have wins over Volkanovski and then Max Holloway. But then you got Brian Ortega in there. I mean, so just all these, I mean, to have that, it's just hard. It's always changing, right? I mean, Bilal Muhammad, you know, beat Leon Edwards, or you know, amazing in that rematch, but Usman is out there at number 2, Shavkat at number 3, so can he do that? I mean, it's not easy to do in any division, under any circumstance, at any time, and I think it deserves a hell of a lot of respect. And, you know, it goes back into that pound-for-pound discussion. What is it? I mean, you know, it continues to go on. Obviously, it rages on with Dana White. And I get it, man. It's such a thing. I don't even usually like to wade too far into it because it's just such a hypothetical rankings type thing, right? But what is pound for pound? Is it when two men walk in? I don't think that's what it is when two men walk into a room. I think it is. And again, I'll give shout out to Gorgeous George Garcia. Him and I worked together on the rankings at MMA Junkie for a long time. And I thought he always framed this right. He said rankings are a snapshot in time, right? It's a reflection of accomplishments and results in recent times, not ability. Again, it's not who you think would win in a fight. If you think you would win a fight, then maybe you should have Bo Nickel up at number 4 right now or something like that, right? But you can't because he doesn't have those wins yet. You know, my example was always John Jones. You could tell John Jones was special early on, but do you rank him number 1 in his UFC debut? No, you don't. You know what I mean? You've got to get the wins. You have to move up those divisions. So to me, as much – and again, I am a John Jones fan, and I believe he is the greatest of all time, but I do not believe he's the number one pound-for-pound fighter right now. So I know pound-for-pound discussion can get a little bit weird out there or whatever, but I think Dricus deserves even more respect than he's getting at number six, man. That accomplishment in itself wins over number one. You have so distinguished yourself from your peers at that time that you deserve, you know, an extra bit of accomplishment in those pound-for-pound looks. So anyway, I'm anxious to see what comes next. I really am anxious to see how everything plays out. You know, I've done a couple of interviews where it's like, hey, what's next for Israel Adesanya? I would really like to see Israel Adesanya and Sean Strickland next. But I know Sean is saying, you know, here's what's interesting. Sean is saying, I'm not fighting unless it's for the title next, right? Which I don't blame him. He has every right to do that, right? You know, I have been a company man. This was a very close fight. Sean's a big star now. He has every right to do that. But Sean's also saying, I'm not going over to South Africa to fight. Now, we don't know how the time is going to work on this. There may be a title defense in there before Dricus fights in South Africa. But I imagine the UFC wants to get cracking on this sooner rather than later, right? Because you don't want to have a fight with Dricus Duplessis, and then you're going over to South Africa with a fight that's not a championship fight. So things could change, right? I mean, Sean may say, I'm sitting out and waiting. Who knows? I'm just saying there are possibilities. And again, I'll remind everybody, you know, Dana White, everybody's basing this off of the interview that Dana White did with Jim Rome leading into 305, where Jim Rome asked him if Sean Strickland's next, and Dana looked up at the board in the war room and said, well, he's number one, yeah. But then it was Alex Buchanan, who the following Tuesday night at Contender Series did say, hey, I want to follow up on that. Are you sure he's number one? He's like, well, and I think he even pointed out, what about Whitaker and Khamzat Chimaev? And then you could see, you know, Dana was like, well, yeah, timing and this and that. So things changed a little bit. So things can move around. So I'm not 100% convinced. I know a lot of people have been working under the assumption Dana said Sean is next, so that must be next. It could be, and it might be. I'm not looking at that as 100% set in stone just yet. We shall see. And again, especially if they go to South Africa, and then maybe things change a little bit, and I don't know. I'd like to see that. But Israel Adesanya can fight whoever he wants, that's for sure, man. I thought he looked good. You know, I talked about it on the and a half episode for the folks over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. I thought he actually looked pretty good. I've seen varying assessments of Israel Adesanya's performance. I had him up 2 rounds to 1 going into the fourth round. I thought he looked good. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But it's exciting. I like the times when there's new champions. I mean, back-to-back pay-per-view events, we're crowning new champions at 304. We're seeing a first title defense at 305, beating a long time who would have been a three-time contender. So I love it when you get these new names, right? It keeps the divisions moving forward. It keeps the divisions fresh. I did see, by the way, and we'll talk to Cole Coffey in a little bit, had a little bit of the media day on in the background, and I did see Kyle Bahio. He was asked who he thinks should be next at middleweight, and he actually threw out the name Brendan Allen. And Kyle Bahio is one of those guys, he's a fighting nerd, but he's a fight nerd, you know what I mean? He really, he's one of those guys. I mean, he commentates on in both languages, by the way, English and Portuguese, which is awesome, man. I love to see that. Portuguese for the UFC, English for LFA. But he's one of those guys that watches everything, studies everything, like loves this sport so much. And there's some fighters that don't watch anything. I don't watch none of that. You know, they need a break from it when they're away from it. They won't do anything else. Then there's guys that watch everything. And he's one of those guys that has a really astute observation. And Brendan Allen is kind of one of those dark horses that's kind of flying under the radar that has this amazing win streak. So he could be in there as well. The other one I thought was interesting, I saw a lot of people up in arms about, not so much about Dan Hooker being up at number, you know, what did he get to, number 5 or number 6? I'll pull that up real quick. He got to number 5. I actually had him at number 6 in mind. To see him go up to number 5, I didn't see anybody complain about that. I did see the interview with Oscar Willis, old hot tea, where it said, like Dan was saying, Charles Oliveira, which was kind of the name that made sense out of all those, is the one the UFC is leaning to. We'll see. I didn't see so much any complaints about that, but there were some people that pointed out Mateusz Gamrot down to 8 may seem a little bit harsh, especially sliding past Michael Chandler. You know, falling below Beneil Dariush makes sense with the result, regardless of the result. That's interesting. And then, of course, there's people that point out that Max Holloway down at number 9 doesn't make sense. I'm kind of torn on that. You know, when bringing Max Holloway into lightweight, I struggled a little bit at first, but I did put him all the way up at number three ahead of Justin Gaethje. I mean, like, you go in there and you dominate and you knock out Justin Gaethje. I don't know how I can't give you his ranking. You know what I mean? And then you think about Max Holloway's career record, his career accomplishments, all those things. I had a hard time not pointing there. So I agree with that I thought Max Holloway is still a little bit low at that point. So, as I said, out here in Washington, D.C., I did have a great card last week, CFFC in Atlantic City. Man, we had a lot of fight changes, a lot of scrambling on that card, but the staff did a great job to pull a great event together, and it ended up being very, very entertaining. So if you get a chance to go check that out, please do so. Watch the replay on USC Fight Pass. I mean, it's obviously, I feel very, very, very fortunate to be calling those fights, man. It's my absolute favorite thing in the world to do. But, you know, didn't get to make the trip to Perth, but did get to see a phenomenal event, CFFC 135. So definitely, 134. We got 135, 136 coming up. Sorry, I was busy writing press releases today, so I had those numbers on my mind. We've got, I was putting some press releases together, man. We've got two events in a 6-day span next month. I'm pretty stoked about that. We're doing Florida on a Saturday night and then North Dakota on a Friday. So there's actually like two events in 6 days. Easy for me. I'll just fly to Florida and then fly back to Vegas, spend some time with my family, and then fly up to North Dakota and do that show. Where, by the way, I'm excited. Donald Cowboy Cerrone is supposed to be doing a special meet and greet out there. So I was like any time I can sit back and have a frosty beverage with Cowboy Cerrone. But anyway, easy for me. Rough on our cage crew, man. Our team, they got to transport the cage 2,000 miles in a relatively short time. Because you think about it, man, you got to break that cage down late Eastern time on Saturday night, get that thing packed up, and then basically, I mean, you got to hit the road the next day. And you got to hit the road on Sunday, I'm imagining. And maybe they'll wait till Monday. Maybe they'll decide to get some sleep on Sunday and then drive it out on Monday. I don't know. I'll wait to see what they do. But they got to drive that cage 2,000 miles and then get it set up, right? And you don't set it up, you know. I mean, you want to get it set up as early as possible, right? So you have time to make sure it's good to go. You can't, you know, sometimes you do set it up the day of the show. But if you can get it set up the day earlier, even better. You know, it just makes it easier and less scrambling, because then you got to break that bad boy back down at night. So anyway, shout out to those guys. But yeah, hopefully you check that out. I did miss Dana White's Contender Series in between because I was heading out here to Washington, D.C. I flew yesterday. I made it on the ground just in time to watch Dana White's Contender Series from my hotel here. Not the best night of Contender Series, I guess. Kind of some ups and downs, some solid performances. But I guess if there was one I was going to miss, maybe this one, I should be there for the rest of them, for the rest of the season. But I did have a chance to check out the Dana scrum. You know, a couple things I just want to point out, that boy, I get his frustration with Merab Dvalishvili, and I love me some Merab Dvalishvili. If you guys have listened to this program for any length of time whatsoever, I have been championing this man from the beginning as somebody who I felt would compete for a title, if not hold a title at one point in his career. That day has finally come, and I love him on social media, man. I love that people are seeing the personality, right? The personality has always been there, but finally it's starting to resonate, and people are seeing it, and I love it. But why would you post a cut on social media, man? Like, when there's an injury, there's only bad things that can come out of that. Like, there's nothing good that comes out of showing an injury ahead of a big fight, right? Number one, and I think somebody pointed it out, and maybe it was Alex Buchanan again. I don't remember. I'll have to go back. Somebody pointed out, like, why would you give, or maybe it was Kevin Ioli even, because I know Kevin Ioli was asking some of the questions and on the next one. Maybe it wasn't. But whoever pointed out, like, it was like, you've got a sharpshooter like Sean O'Malley whose accuracy is stunningly good, and you're showing him where you have a recent cut that could open up in not a place that would instantly stop a fight, but sure as hell wouldn't make things very good. So why would you show that, right? And then the other thing that's even worse than that is if, now granted, this wouldn't happen in this one, we're still several weeks out and this is a small cut, but the commission gets involved. You know what I mean? You get the commission involved, they see an injury, and now they're saying, like, you know, they give you extra scrutiny, or they just flat out say they won't sanction a fight. Like, it's just not good. So I don't know, man. It's this world of social media and this world of, I mean, I love this time and era where all these athletes have a voice, right? I mean, they're commanding their own social media channels and outlets, and so that they can tell the narrative and they can control what's out there. And they can also generate revenue off of it, right? I mean, you can generate revenue off of your stuff rather than these media sites doing interviews with you and making money off those. You can make money off it yourself. You know, I know like Henry Cejudo and Kamaru Usman, they're doing that show together. And I know that other than like the very, very biggest outlets, they're not even really listening to interview offers anymore. Because why? We can do that here, and we can get, and it makes all the sense in the world, right? So that's two, for instance, you know. And I'm not saying Mara's not giving interviews. I'm just saying, like, this is that time and era where they can do that, right? And I love the access that that brings. But, man, there's certain things you just keep behind closed doors, and the little injuries, even as small as it may seem, that's another one. So, anyway, I understood the frustration, and it just made me – it's like the perfect blend of this world right now, right? We're like, we want to give the fans access, and we have the ability to generate revenue off clicks and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like, whoa. Maybe not everything. Maybe we don't share everything. And there's reasons behind it. The other thing, shout out to Kevin Ioli, the whole Francis Ngannou scrubbing out of the UFC 305 promotional stuff. Honestly, probably not a story that I would have chased after, but I was glad he did, and I was glad that Kevin stayed with it. And you know, Kevin Ioli, obviously veteran of the game, has covered every sport years and years and years. Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, I mean, done it all, right? But you know, the fact that Dana wasn't following along with what he was saying and he stuck with the questioning, I think that's a good lesson for journalists. I know it's hard, especially when you're young. And you're not sure, you're a little bit afraid of feeling uncomfortable, or you're a little bit worried about, you know, what are people saying about you, or what's the organization saying, but just stick with the questioning. If it's something that's important to you and it matters to you, and you feel there's a need to get an answer, stick with it. Even if it means you have to explain some things or be patient or seem like somebody's confused, stick with it. And I'm glad he did that. And he got a great answer from Dana White. It's interesting because I know immediately the assumption is, and this is again, man, this is that era where it's just easy to assume. And people just assume, the UFC, man, they made everybody scrub that. And then nobody even bothers to ask. But they make statements of fact without bothering to ask. And Kevin went through and he actually asked. And I thought that was great. And Dana White kind of answered, hey, you know, I had no idea. And he did say, that's on me. By me saying, I don't know, that is not me absolving myself of responsibility. I'm taking full responsibility for this. Love the fact that he already called and apologized to Israel Adesanya. Don't know if he called and apologized to Francis Ngannou, but I'll ask maybe about that this week when we see Francis Ngannou. But anyway, you know, it's funny because it made me laugh because I understand, right? It's production people who – Cole Coffey could speak to this, and this might have been one that was worth saving for him. Because he's been in that position, right? He's actually been in this position before where you're making decisions based on things you assume and precedent of things that have been done before, right? And to be clear, there have been times when they've said, no, don't let that guy's name get mentioned on broadcast. You know, Randy Couture, a fine example of that. But what's funny is then people start to make decisions even though nothing's been said to them. And I've been in this position, right? When I started calling CFFC fights on Fight Pass, there were times where I would be talking about a fighter's history or whatever, and this is in the very beginning, I wouldn't mention the word Bellator. Now, nobody told me not to say the word Bellator, but I'm like, we're on UFC Fight Pass. They probably don't want to hear Bellator. Nobody ever said a word to me about that, but I just kind of assumed it. And then finally, after a couple shows, I'm like, wait a minute. Nobody told me this. Like, it's not my responsibility to not say Bellator on Fight Pass, so here we go. Bellator, you know what I mean? But you know what I mean? It's just like people make assumptions, assuming they think they know what the organization is going to say. So I just thought that was a funny example of it. And props to Kevin Ioli for getting to the bottom of it and getting a quote on it. And even though it's just kind of a small story, man, I just thought those were good examples of, A, not assuming something automatically, man. Get a fact. And number two, that if you are asking and maybe you're not getting the answer you want right away, sticking with it. Now, if you're just stirring the pot and it's not something you really care about and you're just in there just instigating, Are you going to stick with the questioning if it gets a little uncomfortable, or are you just going to bail? Eh. But if it really matters to you, stick with it. I thought that was a great job. I did ask that nobody asked about Ariel Helwani's new vertical, and I was actually wondering if it would come up. Like, for instance, I know that if Oscar Willis had been in there, I know the latest Oscar De La Hoya video would have come up in questioning. Now, when Oscar Willis asks those things, I always know there's absolutely zero journalistic reason to ask that other than you're looking for a great Dana rant for video, and I'm sure he'd be more than happy to admit that to you. There's no prevailing journalistic need to ask that question except to get Dana White on a rant talking about Oscar De La Hoya. With Ariel Helwani, I didn't necessarily think that it would get brought up. You know where the stance is. What do you expect him to say? Like, you know, it's either, you know, I don't think he's going to give him the pleasure of saying don't want to talk about it or that snake or blah, blah, blah. You know, it's probably just going to be like wishing the best of luck, you know. But you know what's going on. I mean, he's not going to give you a real answer about what it means. But I was just interested. I wouldn't have brought it up either. But I did notice that nobody brought it up. But it's big news, man. Shout out to Ariel Helwani. Obviously, was the rival for a long time when it was Junkie versus Fighting, and you know. But you have to give him credit for, man. This is a big move, a big industry move, to align yourself with Yahoo and to be launching a partnership under your name like that, and to own all of your content. Is a big move, man. It's a baller move, to be honest with you. And I think it's a good one. Now again, not knowing all the complete nuances of the deal, and I'm sure all those will come to light. But I think business wise, it's a smart decision, right? Because I know a lot of people have been telling them, hey, just go on your own, man. Like, just do what you do on your own. Like, you're the biggest name in the sport. You've got, you know, while you don't have unlimited access during, you know, due to certain relationships and things, I mean, you do have as good of access as anybody, save for a handful of names and save for, I don't even think he's banned from being on site. I think that's been rectified, right? I'm not sure. But he doesn't need to be. With what he does, he doesn't need to be on site at UFC events. But, you know, certainly a Rolodex of sources and everything else. So, could do it on your own. Like, you don't need anybody to facilitate your content. But there does come some things with that, right? Like, if you go out completely on your own, now you've got to take care of your production costs, your production team, any facilities you're renting, et cetera, whereas if you're aligned with somebody, you know, you may be able to, and I don't know the details. I don't know if he'll be working in a studio space that somebody else owns or somebody else rents or whatever, but you have that. The other big thing is advertising. I mean, I can tell you this in building Junkie. You know, when myself and Dan Stupp and Tom and Eric and those guys early on, you get to a point, and at least we had, I mean, I don't know if you guys know the story of Junkie, how it started, but it's a pretty cool one. I mean, we've told it before, but Dan, Tom, and Eric, the three guys that started it, it was an advertising guy, an IT guy, and an editorial guy that met each other playing house poker games, right? But those are the three areas you really need to have a website working, right? You need one guy creating content, you need one guy that's you know, running the IT side of it, and then you need another person that can go out and sell advertising, right? And that's another big aspect of, if Ariel was completely on his own, you would have like YouTube revenue, which would be awesome. I'm sure his YouTube revenue would be sick. But again, we just talked about the production costs that he would have involved as well. So now you need some sponsorship sales. And I know he's got a lot of good relationships, right? But does he really have the history in closing advertising deals and sponsorship deals to get it done? And then that gets even more interesting, right? Because this is always that gray area of you know, as an editorial person, the advertising should technically be completely separate. And this was always, you know, the battle as we got bigger, we worked with USA Today, right? You know, you see the way things are moving, league partnerships and these sort of things. But how do you make sure that, yes, we're going to partner with you on the advertising perspective, but no, you're not going to have any editorial input whatsoever into what type of content we're producing here, right? So if you don't have a team and it's literally just you on your own, how do you pretend like there's any delineation between editorial and advertising? It's the same guy. You can't, right? So, and again, I haven't spoken to Ariel about any of this whatsoever. You know, so I have no idea what his thinking was, but I'm just looking at it from the outside looking in. I can see, okay, here's some pros if you went this way, here's some cons, et cetera, et cetera. And this seems like awesome because now you've got that awesome Yahoo team around you that can be a big part of it, and so they can handle a lot of the nuts and bolts things while you're handling what you do best, which is hosting a show and doing interviews and bringing access and breaking news and all that good stuff. So big things for him, big things for all the people that are joining him over there. Inevitably, big for the rest of the industry because, you know, I'm sure there'll be some jobs open at MMA fighting now, right? We saw this when The Athletic started, right? When The Athletic started, we lost Dan Stupp, Ben Foltz, and Fernanda Praches. I guess Dan Stupp was already gone, and then we lost Ben Foltz and Fernanda Praches. And then that allowed us at Junkie to bring in Nolan King and Fedor Hanoun, right? So, I mean, like, that's how these things happen, and then you start to filter through. And so, they'll, you know, maybe some people will leave Junkie even and go over to this new team. We know some people are leaving fighting, so that will open up opportunities. Unfortunately, in MMA journalism, there's not a lot of startups and new entities out there a lot of times. So you kind of need things like this. Again, like, you know, when ESPN got in, that opened up some jobs to people not only there, but to backfill the other jobs from there. The Athletic was one, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, it's an interesting time. It'll be really cool to see what they come up with over there. If I was still at Junkie, I would be competing badly, and I'd look at them as my bitter rivals because that's the way I did. You know, I thought about people at that time. Although we all were friends working on the road, it was still a healthy rivalry. Now, now that that's not really my aspect anymore, I think it'll be a good thing. To see. The other interesting thing I'm going to be intrigued to watch is their advertising. Again, you know, it's not a secret in the way that websites and media outlets support themselves financially, right? Because they're not charities. They do have salaries to pay. They do have travel operations, all those things to pay, production costs, as we talked about. And, you know, you can do the premium route, which is where you sell a membership or a monthly fee or whatever. That has not worked in the media space at all, right? That was The Athletic. They had the best of the best. People just don't want to pay for journalism these days, right? It's not a thing to do. You see struggling. And I know across the USA Today network, they're still trying to do it. And there's things you can do like, subscribe if you don't want to see ads or everything's behind a paywall. And then you get into that interesting thing. Like I always find it interesting, like the New York Times is behind a paywall, but then there's certain things that are really like public safety. Like I think when COVID was going around, they're like, well, we won't put that behind a paywall because that's actually such a public interest thing that like we need people to be able to see this news. And you know, it's just, you get into this weird area. So that's one way. It has not worked. It has not been working. Right. And gosh, man, with the Financial Times the way they are right now, and the way that everybody's – I mean, how many streaming services do we all have now? So that's one way. The other way is advertising, right? And that's typically the way you do it, advertising. The one thing that started to scare me towards the end of my time with Junkie was realizing how much of the advertising in MMA is really just MMA. It's all the endemic space, right? The advertising with the promotions, the UFC, the Bellator, the PFL, ONE Championship, et cetera. I mean, just look at the ads. Other than like Google served banner ads that would then tap into whatever your other, whatever else your other browsing history holds, the majority of the advertising is all done in endemic marketing, right? And from my understanding, the new vertical there on Crown is going to have MMA, boxing, wrestling. I'm interested to see, you know, does the UFC advertise with them? How far does that tension go, right? And if the UFC decides they're not going to advertise with them because Dana White doesn't want to have anything to do with Ariel Helwani, then what happens with TKO? What if WWE says, well, we're standing in solidarity and we're not doing that either? Now, I've got to think that Yahoo at least kicked the tires on that. Like, I doubt they made this big relationship and partnership without at least seeing, hey, our largest financial opportunities for advertising going to be there for us. I got to think they at least looked into it and feel confident about it. I would be shocked to find out if they didn't. But just interesting. So, it's interesting for me. For me being more on the outside looking in now, than I was, you know, I'm sure if I was still on the inside right now, I'd be saying, all right, what's the right position for me? You know, if this was my full-time gig, Is this time for me to make a move? And this is, I'm sure, what everybody at all these sites are thinking. Is it time for me to make a move? Do I need to make a phone call over here and find out what's going on with their hiring and their staffing levels? And if I do that, can I do that without my current employer thinking that I'm trying to explore a way to get out of here because I don't want them to come back at me thinking that I was trying to jump ship in the middle of this? That's what's happening right now, I would imagine. So it's a big one. It'll be interesting to see you know, how everything shakes out, where everybody lands, and how the coverage of each site changes based on the staffing that they have and based on the financial commitments that they have and their directions and all that. Like, obviously, this is a big time for MMA fighting to decide what their new direction is going to be. You know, are they going to continue to try to be the behemoth that they are, or after dropping all this salary that they did they say, well, you know what? We were kind of thinking about scaling back anyway, and we're going to go with a little bit smaller coverage of it now, and we're not going to hire any full-time writers. We're going to go more of, you know, the blog-type route or the entry-level type route with our staffing. So it is very, very big news, and it is a very interesting time. So looking forward to that. All right, I am out here in Washington, D.C., covering the PFL. Obviously, the PFL playoffs coming to a close this Friday, August the 23rd, on ESPN and ESPN+. The featherweight and welterweight semifinals are happening. Brendan Loughnane, Kai Kamaka, Magomed Umalatov versus Neiman Gracie, Gabriel Braga versus Timur Kizriev, Shamil Musayev versus Murad Ramazanov. Good media day today overall with everybody there. They use a cool little setup, which I actually liked a lot, man. Check out PFL kind of setting what could be a cool little standard of a – it takes a little bit of a dance. It takes a little bit of a dance, but it seemed to work out pretty smooth. I've yet to see the recordings from it, but it's like you had – I don't know, there were probably eight of us in the room. I know there's a bunch more media coming tonight because of the press conference tomorrow. But today there were probably eight of us in the room. And we would get a chance to ask questions first, and they would kick it over to Zoom, and anybody that was joined virtually could ask those questions, and it was just all one session instead of two different sessions. So it was pretty cool to see that. Magomed Umalatov, by the way, has incredible English, absolutely incredible English, which I didn't know. He's been working on it really hard. He's obviously got a phenomenal career record, but has had a couple of setbacks in his PFL journey. Now he's actually making it to the playoffs, but I just had to give a shout out to that. So if you ever want to do an interview with Magomed Umalatov, should he prove, victorious over Neiman Gracie, he actually does speak very good English. Gabriel Braga was there, given my new relationship with the World MMA Awards. I did want to ask him about that because he was nominated for a Fighting Spirit Award, but I decided to hold it and bite my tongue and wait till afterwards. Assuming that he wins and hoping that he wins, not that I'm cheering against Timur Kizriev in any stretch, but if he wins, I should say, it would be a topic of conversation there. I didn't want to bring it up ahead of time to be like, hey, because I think it's special, right? I mean, he's being nominated for an award because he fought through something difficult. His father passed, and his father was his lead trainer as well. So to battle losing your lead trainer, losing your father, the same man, of course, but both those relationships so key, and to come back and be successful is pretty powerful. And I wanted to ask him about, you know, the nomination, just because, you know, I would think that would be cool. I'm very, very fortunate that I still have both my parents. I have not gone through the loss of a parent yet. I'm not looking forward to it at all. But I would think that whether or not you won an award, right? I would think that the memory of your father being brought to everyone's attention would mean something. You know what I mean? I'm kind of a sentimental person, I'll admit it, you know what I mean? But just to have that moment, you know what I mean? Just to have that moment, to know that, you know, they're gone but not forgotten. And that people realize not only your struggle, but what your loved one meant as well. I would think that would be pretty special. But seeing as how I'm getting emotional right now talking about it, I thought that, you know what, as this man is going into his weight cut and has a very important fight coming up, let's not bring it up now. Maybe we can bring it up in the aftermath. And if he comes up short, then maybe we bring it up another time and we don't get to talk about it in the course of a fight week. But I thought that was cool to be able to see him and his team face-to-face. So I was excited to be out there. But anybody that knows me and knows my passion for CFFC knows that I'm very excited about Jose Perez and his debut. Man, this man I thought should have been in the UFC much earlier than he was. I thought he was a natural for the Ultimate Fighter. He got passed over for that, but now he makes it to PFL. And even his PFL debut got delayed a little bit, but I was happy because it allowed me to be here. I hate that he's fighting another guy that was in the CFFC as well with Jesse Stern. I'm very much, it's like, you know, when Danny Barlow got invited to Contender Series and had to face Raheem Forrest. I'm like, come on, man. What are you doing? Like, I want everybody that I commentate in CFFC, like, I want to see them all do big things at the next level. Like, I get so proud of seeing guys and girls chasing their dream, and I love, you know, knowing how hard they worked on the regional stage and making. I want to see them all do good. So I hate seeing that matchup. Of course, Eric Alacuin is here as well. But I did ask. I asked Jose if Jose Perez could come to the media day afterwards, and thankfully PFL staff was more than helpful to say that, yes, we will get Jose for you. He was not originally part of the media day, and they actually did not stream this. They actually had this just for me. So I want to thank you to the PFL for doing that. They already had all the recording equipment set up for it, and I just said, hey, rather than me breaking out all my gear too, since you already have your recording gear here and it's already running, like, can we just use your gear because it'll make things a lot easier? And they were like, 100%, we'll record it and we'll pass you the file. And they did exactly that. So thank you to the PFL staff, and I'm excited to see Jose Perez making his big show debut, and I had a chance to talk to him about it earlier today.
Well, Jose, long awaited, right, to get to this moment, yeah. Big show debut. So just talk to me, I mean, excitement, nerves, like, what's the feeling right now a few days out?
Oh, fuck yeah, I'm nervous. I'm so nervous. But I acknowledge that just on paper, I can beat this guy. On paper, I could definitely beat this guy. So I'm just going to take it as a big opportunity to make a big statement and, you know, build a name off of his back. I'm hoping that he comes out real tough, and the more of a fight he gives me, the more I can present myself.
The journey to get here took a lot longer than a lot of us thought it would. You know, there were so many things along the way. We thought you should have been in a big show earlier. I guess, how difficult was that process for you to stay focused, to stay positive, to not get discouraged, you know, when these shortcomings happened?
Well, I had a lot of people along the way, and it just seemed like when I first started, nobody really knew or cared about me. And every fight and every time I hit a banana split, and I've got more people co-signing on the fact that I belong in a big league. I go toe-to-toe. Everybody thinks I'm a grappler. I go toe-to-toe with, like, a really good striker, an undefeated striker, and now I've got more people co-signing on me that this is something I'm meant to do. And not only do I feel that the co-signs help for sure, but just my own belief in myself and my team, you know, my coaches, we know that this is what I was supposed to do, that I belong here. And Friday, I just get to prove that. I just get to staple that down. And any questions that are left will be answered on Friday. And I'm really excited to do it, man. I belong here. And I'm just coming to show that I am the guy. I am the guy. The dude that just left here a little bit ago, Brendan, I will surpass him. I will surpass these guys in the coming seasons.
I love that, man. I mean, obviously, like I said, it took a long time to get here. I thought you'd be in the big show a lot earlier than you were. But even once you got here, it didn't happen right away, right?
Man, this year.
Right? So talk to me about that. I mean, look, ideally, I'm sure you would have wished you had this debut under your belt. But, I mean, is there any benefit at all in getting to experience it and you know, getting a little taste of it before you actually make the debut?
Yeah, I think that there was two benefits. Number one, I'm in great shape. I have, in my earlier portions of my career, had bad experiences as far as, like, maybe not dieting as much as I should beforehand and then leaving a lot of, like, dehydration or water to cut. I've been in great shape for an entire year just because of everything that's kind of led up and all the fight fall offs. It's going to happen. It doesn't happen. So, I mean, that's helped me tremendously. And I think I've been on a diet all year. I've really learned a lot about my body and my health and where I need to be at, you know, as far as, like, just like regular fat and diet. But then, yes, there is the actual fight week of experiencing it. Like, I've already went through the jitters. I kind of know what to expect. I know I've never had to cut weight in a hotel, like, the entire time. Normally, I'm flown out the day before weigh-ins, and pretty much at that point, I'm just about on weight, maybe got to float a couple extra pounds, but yeah, no, that was a huge experience, and it was really valuable for me to prepare me for this one, and it's going to pay off.
It's awesome, man. Talk about the matchup you have here. I think you guys were on the same CFFC card at one point in the career, right? Yes. That's kind of wild how it played out like that. So talk about the matchup you have here.
Like I said, so we were on the same card. My second pro fight was at CFFC 91, and I was pretty new to the promotion, and I was really trying to get back in, and at that point, they weren't calling me back. But someone falls out due to COVID, short notice opportunity, and I came in and made a statement, and but it gave me an opportunity to kind of look at get the lay of the land, look at what CFFC had to offer. And this guy was the main event that night, the same night as me, same weight, fighting for the belt that I would eventually work my way up to achieving. So, I mean, I'm kind of looking at the same thing. So now we get our chance to do our little squabble, and I've got my lay of the land. I'm looking at the other guys. I'm looking over my shoulder at my peers like Brendan and Teamer and Gabriel Braga, these guys, and right now they are ahead of me, it won't remain that way for long, and it starts with Jesse Stern was a guy that was ahead of me. He was a guy that has more fights than me. He's got more than twice my experience. None of it matters. He's someone that's good on the ground. I'm better on the ground. He's someone that's pretty decent on the feet. I'm better on the feet. He's someone that's pretty good in wrestling. We might be about tied there, but I don't make adjustments for my opponents. I have been able to play my cards the way they were dealt to me. I'm good at the striking. We're going to strike. I'm not going to dive for legs. I got the grappling. Whether he slips and falls on a banana peel, takes me down, I take him down, whatever route it takes to where he goes to the ground, all roads lead to me taking his back and me taking his neck. I ground control or not, I am not a black belt, but I'm the black belt in this situation.
Talk to you about the little mini documentary that came out, man. I watched it this morning. Very powerful, I thought. You know, and not only just for your own journey, but just, I mean, there's so many guys like you, right, that maybe aren't as honest and open about how they feel. What did you think seeing that piece come out and kind of putting in your journey, like, all into perspective?
Yeah, so this is actually his third time checking in with us. And it's weird. It's fate, man. I feel like Ray Hoy, wonderful guy, really talented. I'm super blessed that he just randomly hit me up one day and decided to pick me to, like, just start following my journey. And he always seems to come and do a documentary right before something pivotal in my life happened. So he showed up right before the Paul Capaldo fight, which, if you don't know, that's the fight where I got cut real bad. That was like a fight of the year candidate from Fight Pass, from CFFC, from everyone, you know, outside looking in, regardless of who you are, it's just a great fight. It was a big moment in my life, a big turning point. Showed up right before that, just luck of the draw. He showed up right before I was going to end up getting the title for the CFFC, and actually right before one of my best friends died. And it was, none of it was something that you could plan. We didn't know what the outcome would be. It just always seemed that he shows up right before something big and pivotal happens. And he showed up right before this one, and I think this is going to be no different. I think that nobody knows me. You don't know me, but you will. You're going to learn quickly. And so, I mean, I think it's a big deal. He's really good at his job, and that makes the process really easy. But then I think that, as you've heard me say before, I kind of look at myself less of a fighter, more of a martial artist. So that's why I am so transparent in how I feel and some of the real jitters, because this video is, yes, it's for the fans to get to know me. It's for the fighters that will follow the beaten path that I'm laying for them. But it's also for me. When I'm an old man and all the fight's gone, I'm going to look back on that. And I want to be able to look in my eyes and watch that video and understand that I was being honest and genuine.
That's awesome, man. Last thing for me, man. Listen, man, I've obviously been honored to see your journey firsthand, man, and know what you're capable of. What's the mindset coming in here? I mean, you know, you're already talking about the top of the division and feeling that you belong there and we'll get there. So, I mean, is this just about going and registering to win, or is this like going out and doing something spectacular where immediately everybody is talking about you on Saturday morning?
What do you think? The plan is to make a statement. The plan is to dominate and then finish the fight. The plan is to make my case that I am one of the greats in this roster, and the plan is to make my case that I belong in the season for the $1 million prize, because I know for a fact that I'm going to make my statement on Friday. Hopefully they bring me back for another fight before the year's up, make another statement, maybe against one of the guys that were previously in the roster but maybe didn't make it to the end. Make a statement against one of those guys. And then, yeah, man, put me in the season next year and you will make me a millionaire. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get my happy ending to this story.
All right, that was Jose Perez, longtime CFSC veteran, former champ. I'm just a fan, honestly, of the way he fights. I'm a fan of the way he handles himself, and I will definitely be excited on Friday night as he makes his PFL debut. We'll also be excited for the big press conference. We'll talk about that briefly. But as mentioned, Cole Coffee is joining us now from Las Vegas as well. His media day is complete, and we are happy to bring him on board the show late, but not due to any reason other than the fact that he was just out there grinding.
Just out here grinding, you know. I was, you know, trying to gather the hard-hitting news. You know, I was taking pictures of the dirt again. I was watching, you know, the bulldozers out there, you know. You know, the hard-hitting stuff. Did you see the tweet I put out earlier? I thought it was quite clever and funny.
I did.
So I was coming from the backside, and then I noticed that there's been some piles of dirt back there, and I saw some dirt, some dozers. And so then I took a picture, and then I was just literally, I couldn't stop laughing in my head because the text was writing itself in the head, and it was like, you know, for those that, you know, that are fans of the back end or like the back end or whatever, I was like, here's your hashtag dirt stuff, you know, and all I kept thinking in my head was like, butt stuff, but I was like, dirt stuff. And I was just like, well, you know, it's the hard hitting news. You know, people care about my dirt news.
Well,
you know, it's become a ridiculous thing. And now I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to keep doing it.
I love it.
But they were literally doing some big shit today, though. They were really getting into plumbing the pipes that they're running from. That either connects out into the main road, that it's the biggest portion of the ditch that you sort of see. They've been putting that piping. That's got to be either sewage or water or something. So the road that's kind of that you would come in and turn in and around is all cut up, and like these big iron plates are there. And so the bulldozers were there lifting those out, and the guys were in the trenches laying all that stuff today. So stuff's happening. Stuff is happening.
It's funny. So I do love your updates, and I'm going to continue to like them and retweet them so people can see the Apex construction. But you know what's funny is last week, and I almost took a picture of it, and I didn't. I'm like, John, you're being ridiculous right now. But we were leaving the Apex. I can't remember if it was leaving or when I showed up. Anyway, it was around last week's fight night. But I think your car was parked close to mine, so you might have seen the same thing. But did you see the exposed fire hydrant? I'd never seen the underside of a fire hydrant before. I don't know why.
No, I didn't see it.
I know this is the dumbest thing ever, but I was so amazed by it. It was an area that they've just excavated like whole entire areas, right? Yeah. But it was a fire hydrant that used to be sitting, I guess, like kind of in like a little parking island because it's right where we park or whatever. But all the dirt and everything was pulled away from it. So you have the nice bright red fire hydrant sitting here, and then just this huge like water pipe going like 10 feet down into the ground and then like over to the side. Granted, this is stupid, but in my entire life, at my age, I've never seen the underside of a fire hydrant connected to the underground water grid, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you don't work in like construction that handles that sort of stuff, or the guys that, you know, like a city water department, like whoever would see that shit, you know? Now I want to see it. I didn't see it, but now
Now I regret not taking a picture. In my head, I'm like, Morgan, stop being an idiot, dude. But then I was like, you know, the problem was
Friday, I'm going to be on lookout. I'm going to be on water lookout.
I think the problem was I hadn't had any frosty beverages at the time. Had I been a few beers deep, like that thing's definitely getting tweeted out. You know what I mean? Because I was stone cold sober, I second guessed myself and thought nobody needs to see this, so I didn't take a picture of it. So we'll get into some things, but I guess construction related. Maybe I was watching a little bit of your stream while I was working, and obviously I had my media day, and then I came back. I was working on some CFFC stuff. I started doing recording here, but you guys lost power over there for a little bit, right? Was that construction related?
I mean, they couldn't figure it out. I mean, that's the only real thing that I could sort of point that it happened, because it, you know, it just happened to be at the exact same time. But yeah, it was weird. It could have been that it was just either a power surge or something, but they couldn't figure it out. But you know what was funny, because right when it happened, Robert Valentine, is that who was up on the stage at the time, was telling a story about taking drugs and mushrooms and being in the woods, and like he saw the gods of the land come out and all this other shit, and trees were like bending over. And so it literally, I was thinking like, is the UFC censoring this? I was like, I looked back at there and I saw Sam starting to walk towards the thing. Like, and I was like, if he goes to PR and says like, somebody told me to pull the lever down, I'm going to be like, what the hell? We have never had this happen. And then I saw him, you could see in the look in his face, he's like, oh, something's not right. And then it just so happened that, yeah, like some unit underneath the stage, something either shorted out. They think there was maybe a short in the Cat 5 cable that runs to it, or there was a short in the XLR cable. They said like three things that possibly could have shorted out, which maybe, you know, when I hear that, I'm thinking like, okay, maybe there was a power surge, maybe there was something. But in all the years that we've been there, this has never happened. And so when I sit there and I was like, well, what could it be? Sure, it could be purely coincidence that massive $20 million construction update is happening to the building, or it might be related. So who knows? It could have been construction or not, but it was just at the weirdest, funniest moment, because, you know, the guy up there talking about taking drugs and like seeing otherworldly things. And then it dies. And then the funny enough thing, we wait so long for them to try to fix it. They finally take him up the stage. They get it fixed. He goes up there. We have to sort of reconnect his brain to what part it was in the story. He tells like the story for like one more minute. And then that was it. And nobody had any follow-ups because everybody was already kind of over it. And then he didn't have anything else. I was like, oh, God, I guess we needed the end of the story. But I was like, poor guy, we made him come back just to finish that last little bit. I was
just
like,
to talk about his mushroom trip.
Just to call about his mushroom trip, you know.
That's amazing. Hey, you know what, though? It will be interesting, I guess, maybe to just monitor anything that might happen over the next few months until maybe it closes, maybe it doesn't. But, I mean, obviously there's fight nights coming up. There's Dana White's Contender Series stuff going on, so it will be interesting to see. Not a lot of stuff from the media day today, at least from what I gather. I didn't think there was anything revolutionary. I did like the Baby Shark brought her baby shark, and Angela Hill brought her killer whale to kill the baby shark, right? I mean, I guess that was kind of funny. GM3 made it clear that Brendan Allen was just kicking it at home the night of the alleged incident in the casino, so that couldn't have actually been Brendan Allen in a fight with Marvin Vettori, because he was clearly hanging out at his house. I did see Jared Gordon retweeted your guys' clips that I also didn't see anything, so clearly that wasn't him. But I don't know. I mean, anything else? You know, Kyle Bahio, his first main event, that's a big one. You know, obviously, Jared Cannonier is always an interesting cat, but I don't know anything, you know, just that stood out to you today or, you know, you really resonated with you as you're looking ahead to this week's card.
I mean, Bahio was certainly, very sure of himself. He wasn't being too, you know, overconfident. In fact, he was giving a lot of credit to, Jared, which I thought was smart. You know, I mean, I think at this particular moment, this is the first time that we've seen the fighting nerds jump into the main event of a fight. I mean, these guys have been killing it, man. That camp is just on a whole nother level right now. And I think this moment.
Nominated for a World MMA Award, by the way.
There you go. I mean, like, he easily could have got swept up into it, caught up in it. He could be like, you know, look at us now. We're bigger than life. You know, nobody can touch us. But no, he was very, very, you know, humble about it, very reframed, and he was saying all the right things about, you know, this isn't, you know, kind of their, you know, party, their chance for everybody to finally notice them, you know, that they've been doing the work, you know, and they're slowly been getting there, and they're doing all the right things. The fighters are fighting on a good level. So he's got a really level head about, I think, this fight. And I think, you know, when I asked him, you know, like, you're looking at Jared, who's 40, who's been around a long time, you know, I can easily see where somebody might be like, is this the same dangerous cannoneer that we saw maybe 5 or 6 years ago? And he's like, that, you know, and I love it. Obviously most fighters, you know, they play the good thing, and they're like, no, I'm always thinking it's the most dangerous person. But that, of course, is kind of like what he was saying. And Jared's kind of one of these guys that when you look at him, you know, it's not like he ever really looks like he tires out. He does look like he's still in incredible shape. And I mean, like, if you didn't look at him, if you, I mean, outside of just realizing like we've been watching him forever, if you didn't look at him, you wouldn't, he doesn't look like 40. He doesn't move like he's, you know, 40. And not that 40's old. I mean, I'm 50 myself. But, like, when you look at guys in the cage fighting, he's not like one of these older heavyweights that just, you know, is able to be in there because they don't take much of these long fights. It's just one punch done, and they're like, okay, I'll do this for the next 10 years. I can take one punch and be done.
Yep.
He looks good. He looks in good shape. And that's kind of what Kyle is expecting. I loved his mindset. I did pick Kyle in this one. No slight for Jared. We've been watching Bohio since he had his debut there. And I mean, this kid is on the up and up. He's on the rise. I think he's powerful. I think he's quick. I think he has more potential areas to get the win. And if he's going in there with the right mindset, he's not thinking that he's just going to walk through Jared that, they're putting me up against this old guy and I'm going to retire him. You know, if he would have said something like that, I think I would be like, okay, well, hell with you. Now I'm gonna go for Jared. You know, he's saying all the right things. I think he's really, really focused. And right now, that team, they're firing on all cylinders, man. Yep. So I think it's gonna be really, really. I think it's gonna be a fun fight. I think it's gonna be interesting. I think he needs to keep his wits about him because Jared's a wily veteran, man. He's very, very skilled. He's very strong, and he has a way of sort of commanding the fights to go his way. So if Kyle doesn't kind of really dictate the pace and kind of lets Jared sort of do his thing, then he's going to be in trouble. But I think he's going to be okay. I think by how it's kind of so cliche to say it's his time now. But, you know, when you look at these two fighters and whose time it is to really sort of shine, I think it is Kyle's fight. And I think this is the fight that's really going to put him on that map. When people start saying, like, well, who have you fought? You know, when they start looking at contention, this is that fight where people are going to be like, okay, that dude's legit. I can't really hate on it. And if somebody says, oh, well, it's a 40-year-old, you know, guy that he's going, you know, they're not looking at the right things. Because, I mean, Cannonier is still a dangerous guy. He's still, top-tier guy. So it'll be good. But, I mean, both guys were very, very respectful. Cannonier, he's always fun when he gets in there. And I thought he was in a good mood. I thought he was very personable today. But yeah, no, it was good. I mean, both guys, they're not going to go in there and talk a lot of shit. So we didn't have anything where it was just like, yeah. Oh yeah, man, he said this one thing. And it was just like, you kind of got what you expect. They're both nice guys going in there and it's going to be on a good fight. And, it's pretty cool. I think he said it was his fourth main event. The only person at the Apex, the only person that has more than him, I think is Strickland, which has five.
Strickland, yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's impressive. I mean, it's impressive, man. He's tallying it up. So good for him. But yeah, no, I think it's a good fight. I think it's a good main event. I mean, you know, if somebody was like, oh yeah, that's a good Apex main event, you know, granted, you're not going to see this at a pay-per-view main event. Is it going to be in a pay-per-view main card? Sure.
You could see it there. Yeah, 100%.
I could see it in the main card, 100%, you know, yeah. But yes, I mean, this is the perfect fight to headline an Apex card or a fight night card or a traveling card that's in an area. Like if this was in Brazil, I could see this, you know, if they were trying to build him up, I could see this as being a main event because Cannonier is a guy that's been there. He's been there, done that, and he's fought the best of the division. So, yeah, it's a good fight. It's a good fight.
I'm excited for it. I look forward to it. I will actually be there on Saturday. So I've got an early flight out of Washington, D.C. I will be there in time for the fight, so I will see you at the Apex. And, of course, we will talk about everything that happened afterwards on the and a half episode over at patreon.com. All right, listen, big press conference tomorrow. I will say word has just been going around as we're sitting down to record this. Larissa Pacheco, Chris Cyborg will not be there anymore. Some complications in travel and planning. So now it will just be the main event, which – I mean, I think the hardcores, obviously, we were looking forward to Pacheco and Cyborg being there. But, I mean, for the visuals and the whatever, I'm sure the main event was what people are most excited for. And
so they're
of course,
just missing the press conference. It's not like there's the fights in question. It's just the press conference.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Okay. They just won't be there at the press conference.
I was like,
yeah.
Damn, what did I miss?
No, not that big, not that big. And of course, Jake Paul will be.
Man,
there,
I was
so
like,
most
that sucks.
Yeah,
I'm glad we didn't lose it. That would be a bummer if that fight. I don't even want to put that out in the universe. So I'm
fight's
glad it's
still
just
on
the press conference.
And fight's still on, and also some interesting rumblings going around on the ground here in town about some of the other fights that will be on that card. So it's been interesting to hear the little murmurs in the background, some big names. So it looks like they're trying to pull out all the stops for that card. But that'll be tomorrow. So real quickly, first of all, I had just two things I wanted. One, I was thinking about you earlier, and I wish I would have waited to bring it up until you're here, but I'm going to touch on that with you in a second. First of all, I want to bring up UFC 305. You talk about people whose time it is to shine. It is Dricus du Plessis' time to shine.
Yeah,
he is a champion. I want to bring up that for two reasons. One, because I want to allow you the spotlight to bask in your leadership role in the number one spot in the Junkie Picks as you go on for the three-time to be the first ever three-time champion.
Let's
You're
go.
Well on your way. So I want to let you brag about that. But also, I want to hear about the Fight House because – you know, you sent the invite to me, and unfortunately I couldn't make it. My wife was actually working at the Craig Jones Invitational over this weekend, and so that left me in charge of watching my son. And I did say that I would be willing to bring him, but I know it is a 21 and up environment.
Unfortunately, it's a 21 over. Circa is 21 and over. If people don't know that, Circa is one of the newer resorts, but it is 21 and over.
Well, I just want to get the update because, you know, all of a sudden you're Mr. VIP over here, bro. I mean, you're hanging out. You're showing me these views of this place. I mean, you're rolling deep over there.
They put me a table up there. They ran me power. They gave me a hard line. I was like,
I mean,
I shouldn't even say this, but like, so we're there. So I took Fiasco. Fiasco finally came out and decided that he wanted to hang out with me. And so I dragged Fiasco up there. Not only did they like treat us like a king, let us into the room. Normally we wouldn't go in there until the pay-per-view, but I was like, yo, I'm working the prelims. I was like, is there any possible way I can get in this room? So this room is unfinished. It's completely raw. It overlooks the stadium swim area, which now they've dubbed the stadium swim area. When they put on fights, they call it the Circa Fight House. But this room upstairs on the 15th floor is completely unfinished. And what we call that particular room is the fight warehouse. It literally looks like it could be in like Fight Club. And there's a scene in Fight Club when they're in like this abandoned like building and they're watching the other buildings get like blown up. And it's all sort of like an unfinished like room. That's what that room feels like. But they set up these chairs, they set up these tables, and they gave an invite to come hang out and watch this. Fun enough, it's open bar. That's why I thought of you. I thought you might enjoy that. But then they put on the fights. And when I told them, I was like, dude, you know, I would normally just be working at home. I was like, is it cool if I work out there? And they're like, that'd be great. And I was like, you know, but I got to kind of get there early because I got to do the prelims. And I was like, if you could let me in that room early, that would be great. And they're like, let me see what I could do. And I was like, and if you happen to have a hard line and like and power so I can have my computer there.
And they're
I'll set you up a desk and I think I can get you power and I think I can get you hard line. And I was like,
And it's so funny because they're like, all right, cool, man. Well, the main card starts at 7. So like how early do you need to get in? You're like, 3:30.
3:30. And lucky enough, I love this gentleman there. Aaron is his name. He happened to be in the building because there was something else going on in the building. That building has a lot of stuff going on. Circa has a lot of stuff going on. If you guys have been there, it's one of the newer
it's a beautiful facility,
resort casinos. Yeah, down on the Fremont. It's at the very end. If you've ever been to Fremont in the past, like maybe 4 or 5 years, maybe even a little bit before that, and you saw construction at the very, very end of it, right by the main street, that was the Circa that was getting built. It's all finished. It's 21 and over. So even the pool is like on the 5th floor, which is like ridiculous or something. You have to go up in this pool area, but it's 21 and over. They have like super attractive staff working. It's just people drinking, getting out in the sun.
But it's heated, so it's open all year long.
It's heated. And yep. I mean, people stay in the pool all day long, so it's extra heated because these motherfuckers never get out of the pool. And you just watch them drinking. I was sitting there up top. I'm like, I guarantee that motherfucker right there drinking hasn't been out of the pool in hours. I was like, that pool's like extra warm right now. But
sir,
I will tell you, the
sir,
talent.
They've got
the
extra
talent,
filters.
Like,
don't worry.
The talent working there is top-notch and what you would expect from a new fancy resort.
Yes, it is.
But they put on the fights. They allowed me to work from there. It was incredible. The only thing that was I was a little iffy and scared about, you know, it takes some time for the post-fight press conference. Mm-hmm. So I have to help cut some of the post-fight press conference stuff. But I'm like, they're not going to let me sit in this room for hours after this. Right. I was like, I kind of got to bolt. So as soon as DDP locked in, got that finish, I didn't even wait for the tap. I didn't wait for the arm raise. I knew that the elevator, it's tough to like get to have it go up. I'm running to the elevator. First, get down the elevator because I had to still drop Fiasco off at his house. So luckily, getting out there, getting on the freeway, getting back, I got back just in time.
You went to the Garage Mahal.
To pick up your car. You know all the stuff.
Yeah.
So I went to the Garage Mahal, got that, got him back, and got back home in time for Izzy up there, which I was glad that he went straight away and said his things. I mean, kudos to him. He was saying a lot of good things. You know, I appreciated what he said. I loved that there was a nice, respectful moments between those two. But yeah, man, anybody comes in here, like even if you want to go watch a fight of that thing, I think it was $40, which is not bad. If you go to like B-Dubs and some of the other places, it's a little bit maybe it's free at most of them unless they do a little surcharge. But this is a pool. A lot of pools will charge admission to get into the pool, but it gives you free access to the pool. And there are some chairs that you cannot sit in that are like the up buys or whatever. But there were a lot of lounge chairs. But if you want to see like some attractive people, drink beers, watch fights on a giant screen and something different, it is a really, really cool location. And it was really cool watching the fights. Granted, I watched most on the TVs that was in front of us, but see it on the big screen, like to see them fighting in a screen that I don't even know how big that screen is. I'd have to guesstimate. I don't know, 50-100 feet wide. I don't know, something like that. Massive. It's amazing when you see something that big watching these fights and stuff. But as to the fight, it was a great fight, man. Great night of fights. I did pick DDP. I am going for the 3-time pick champion right now. I'm the only 2-time champ. Me and Farah were tied going into that fight. I picked DDP. She picked Izzy, and I'm sure you talked about it, man. Izzy looked really good into that fourth round. I gave DDP the first round. I think Izzy took the second and third, and I thought he was winning the fourth until he got caught at the end. And that was just sort of weird. Drickus looked tired, right? I mean, he looked like he was winded.
He always looks tired.
I know, but I was just like, he was putting everything into those punches and he was missing a lot of the shots. And then it just felt like he was like a step slow. He just felt like off, and I was like, oh man, I'm thinking like I'm gonna give up the lead. You know, I was thinking that, and then I was like I just wanted to see a good performance where somebody didn't gas out or something. And I was like, if you're gonna go to the championship and you're gonna fight for the belt, like I wanted to see the best performances. And I started getting really worried watching Drickus because it looked like he just wasn't connecting. He was putting too much in his punches. But I mean, maybe Izzy just has that way. I thought Drickus was going to do what Strickland did and walk him down. He didn't. He stayed at that distance, which is perfect for Izzy. And I was like, what are you doing? You're like staying at a kickboxer's length from a hell of a kickboxer. I'm like, I don't understand what you're doing. And then when he tried, and they had those like little blitzes where he sort of like charged forward, and those were working for the most part when he was moving forward. And I was just like, why doesn't his team just tell him to keep moving forward? But I guess if you keep moving forward and you're not smart about it, Izzy's going to knock you out. But I thought it was great. I thought it was a hell of a finish. He was able to get that. And then it secured me the plus one on the staff picks right now. So I have the potential. But there's still a lot of time left, man.
Still a lot of time.
And, man, every time we have to pick PFL, I don't know the PFL fighters as well as, like, the UFC guys. I mean, I know, like, the big ones.
Yeah, so but you're not able to watch every time.
We're picking PFL. Yeah, it's just too much. A lot of it is just too much. So this week we had to pick PFL picks and the UFC picks. And I'm looking at the calendar. I'm like, oh, man, it's still August. We still got September, October, November, December. I'm like, my one lead isn't that strong, you know, so I'm hoping to do that. So this week, the picks are a little bit different. I think we got the tough. I think me and Farah picked opposite on the tough finale. You watched the tough series. Did you watch all of them?
I didn't watch the last couple ones because I've been traveling.
You didn't watch the last one? Fight was pretty good. I did watch the last episode, and it was kind of weird because it was like a the guy was Santos, Myron Santos was supposed to fight, wasn't cleared by the commission because of the injury that he took in the previous fight. So like they're like an hour before the fight, they knew that there was a potential of three guys, but an hour before the fight, you know, the commissioner, Jeff, they pulled him in to the thing and there's Mullins, you know, Jeff Mullins like telling them like, I'm sorry, you know, like you haven't been cleared by the doctors, and they're so apologetic, you know, but you could see the heartbreak on this kid's face, you know, because obviously the show does a great job of sort of building up the emotions of these fighters going right before that fight. So I'm like, oh man, he's super stoked. And then literally having his dreams like just like pulled right out from under him. And it was kind of hard to watch. But so Santos had to fight one of his teammates and he looked good. So after watching that, I was like, I'm going with that dude. Ferrer went with his opponent. And then the other one, Valentin, against Ryan Loader. I went with Valentin on that particular one. So it should be good, man. I'm looking forward to that. But man, those, I think it's a great, it was a good, fun season. But, you know, that one stood out for me today as well, listening to those particular guys talking about, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, this fight this weekend.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm looking forward. I definitely plan on watching that episode tonight or tomorrow night at the worst before I get back to Vegas. And after PFL. So I'm looking at the schedule. I'm thinking, now this is months away, so who knows what's going to happen between now and then. But I would like to come out there and watch a fight with you, man. If you can still get the VIP invitation. Now, look, the Sphere is next.
I'm hoping, because they might close that thing down soon. So you got to make it happen. You're always off the flying round. Like, there were a decent amount of people showed up, but at any point, I think that they might just finish it out. It's too good of a space to not finish out. So hopefully.
Sphere is next. Obviously, we'll be covering that in September. That's only a couple weeks away. October is Salt Lake. I'm not sure what my schedule is for Salt Lake yet. I may be in Salt Lake, or we may have something CFFC related. But I'm looking towards later that month, October 26th. That may be too far away, but October 26th, that's UFC 308. That's Abu Dhabi, which, if I remember right, that's a primetime Abu Dhabi card, right? Which means a daytime card for us in Las Vegas. If that's the case and everything's still there.
A little day drinking,
maybe a little live and a half episode, me and you together right there. I don't know if they'll kick us out afterwards or let us hang out and record a podcast afterwards. But if the place isn't done yet, because I know, and we're still firming up the CFSC schedule yet. But right now, I think that weekend is off. And if that's a day card, we can do a little day drinking, watch a little UFC, and maybe do a little and a half all from the fight house at the circuit if it works out.
Dude, that would be a lot of fun. I'm crossing my fingers that I wouldn't have to be like the remote editor on that, because if I don't have to be the remote editor, I can get fucked up. Because like the last one, like I had to be good because I was working and I was driving, so I had like one beer, and I was like. Albert, please drink for me, please. One of us needs to get drunk.
if it works out that way, we're Ubering over there, dog. We're not driving.
I thought about that too.
We're Ubering.
If I don't have to
there.
Rush out of there, like we'll Uber it for sure. Because yeah, I mean it's such a unique thing. So hopefully, we can get it over there again. Because yeah, I mean they took good care, and I'll tell you some things offline that I probably shouldn't put out there that they gave me I don't want to publicize it. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But yeah, dude, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be this weekend's going to be great fights. I'm looking forward to, you know, these two week things, man, contender series. And then the UFC, I will admit I was a little burnt getting out today, like coming straight from like contender series, get up early this morning to go back in there. I'll be ready.
Are you doing road to UFC also? I mean, you might as well be there
No.
It's
funny.
You could be at Apex every day this week. If you wanted to be, you could be at Apex every day this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow, I'm actually getting the new internet installed. So I'm using that as partially my excuse. So I'm trying out that new internet provider. And I was just like, they asked me, they're like, are you coming to the road to UFC? I was like, no. I was like, I want a day off. And I was like, tomorrow's my day off. I'm like, you are not going to see me in here for the weigh-ins. And Friday for the thing, I was like, no, I'm doing the weigh-ins and then I'm going home. I was like,
I'll be like,
enough.
I've got to have a dude drop off a router. So I can't be there.
Yeah. Well, no, they got to run the wiring too up on the top of the roof.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they had to do all that.
It's that, yeah, it's the, So the provider's WeLink, and it's not like a fiber where they run it from the pipe, and it's not like using the existing like Cox, which is like into the cable that's into your house. They actually have to set a device up on the roof and point it so it can get line of sight to some other little spoke or something. So there, yeah, somebody actually has to climb up there, and I have to sit in here and make sure, I guess, that they don't fall off the house and then get it get it all set up and stuff. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be cheaper internet. That's and it's right. going to be faster.
We're all kicking Cox to the curb, man, because Cox internet in Las Vegas. If you live in Las Vegas, you already know. I don't even have to talk about it. Like, you already know. Even if you work for Cox Cable in Las Vegas, you probably know. Like, I can't really argue.
No, you can't.
Like, it pays my bills, so I'm here. But yeah. Our prices are crazy. So, all right. Well, listen, it's been a little bit longer episode, but it was fun because we got to come from a different halves of the country, different angles, and we had a nice interview with a fun little CFFC talent making his big show debut in between. So, appreciate everybody that's listening in. Obviously, appreciate everybody that supports us over at patreon.com/TheMMARoadshow. If you're not doing so, we would appreciate it. Of course, we'll do the and a half episode this week. I will be back in Las Vegas on Saturday, so it will be PFL Friday night for me. UFC Saturday night, and then we'll record that. So we appreciate everybody that supports us. But if nothing else, we just appreciate everybody that gives us any bit of their time at all. And we'll just say thanks for listening.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.